Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Professor Charles Spence. How are you, Charles?
Not too bad this morning.
Yep, excellent. Yeah, you were just saying you've just been to a physio with a bad back.
A little bit of a sore back, but otherwise, at least it's a sunny day, so...
Yeah, you can't complain, isn't it?
You'll feel better then.
So we're in your office in Oxford, and the Oxford University. Is Oxford broken up into different sub-universities or...?
Colleges and departments.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't make any sense, it's exactly how it is. Yeah. So about 35, 36 different colleges.
Yep.
And then about how many departments? I don't know. So everyone, most of the undergraduates, they'd come to a particular college.
Yep.
Mine is Somerville. So Margaret Thatcher's college, she came there, but happened to study in chemistry or whatever it was that she undertook.
Okay.
And so my psychology students here might come from almost any one of the 36 colleges.
Okay. One of the things you've been doing, and I've seen a few of the articles that you've printed in the past, is a lot of things about wine and music, mm-hmm. wine and sound. You know, mm-hmm. you seem to be, from a psychology point of view, quite into wine. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's from a consumption point of view. Do you like wine?
Yes, drink a fair bit.
Yep.
And have done. And one of the benefits of being at least some of the Oxbridge colleges, they're not necessarily my current one, is they have very good wine cellars.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I first got into sort of fine wine at St. John's in Cambridge. Had a very fine cellar, and you could buy the wine at the price they paid to purchase it.
Oh, lovely.
The older the wine, the better. So that was very good back in the, whenever it was, in the 90s. But nowadays, we do a lot of work on food and drink. A lot of it's on things like margarine and iced tea and other stuff. But it turns out if you look in the literature and you want to know more, what's the psychology behind the drinking experience or the eating experience, whatever product you're interested in, Coke to Branston pickle to sausages to coffee. In fact, there's always been like 10 times more research done in the world of wine than any other thing you can stick in your mouth.
Fantastic.
And hence, that's the place to go to figure out how it all works. What do we know so far? What's the best way to test it? And from there back. And in fact, reading about all the wine psychology research just got me interested in how passions are raised when thinking about the effect of music on wine or the effect of price on wine or branding, and say people have an opinion about that, cork versus screw top. And it's a good place for the psychologist to come along and say, maybe this is the way to design the experiment to see if it really matters. Or if it does matter, why does it matter? Is it because of what's going on in your head or what's going on in the glass?
Okay. What I want to talk about today is wine and pricing and some of the psychological effects of wine and pricing. I think probably the best place to start, though, is in the shop itself. You wrote a review of wine pricing, and you looked at some of the other experiments that had gone on. And the one that really caught my eye was the one where they, in a shop, and they played some German music, mm-hmm. and then they played some French music, mm-hmm. and it changed the purchasing patterns.
So there are a couple of now classic studies done on wine and music in the store setting. One from Adrian North, who was at the time in Scotland, I think, or in Leicester, who did a study in a supermarket with sort of French and German wine alternating on the shelves, and then day by day or week by week, as a good psychologist would, change the music between kind of a French accordion music, as if you're on the banks of the River Seine, and then the next day it'd be sort of German beer keller, umpa, umpa kind of music in the background. And they just looked at till receipts over the days, over the weeks, and found that people bought far more French wine when the French music was playing, far more German wine when the German music was playing. Not a small effect, but if the French music was in the background, 75% of the bottles bought were French and only 25% German. And that number essentially reversed. Suddenly 75% of German wine bought with German music in the background. So I think it's important for that, just saying how influential the background, the atmosphere is in the store, be it the lighting, be it the music, be it even the smell perhaps. But beyond that, when the consumers came away from the till, and the psychologist came up and said, well, you know, why did you buy French wine today, sir, madam? Could that music have had anything to do with it? Nearly everyone said, of course not. You know, I was going to have French food tonight, I had baguettes and stuff, and so it's obviously going to be French. So people have no introspection about, they don't understand the power of the environment to affect our choices, and hence you need to look at people's behaviour as much as what they say is influencing them, because we all say the environment in which we purchase or drink wine isn't affecting us, and yet it does. I think the other classic study was done in a Canadian wine carve back in the 90s by Iranian Kim, and they just looked at playing classical music,
mm-hmm.
with quality, classy associations versus top 40 music.
Yeah, yeah, in that Kylie wine Minogue. Store. Or maybe not top 40 these days.
Yeah. and found that people spent significantly more on their purchases in the wine store with a classical music than with the pop music.
That's quite interesting because we've got a lot of listeners who run stores. Mm-hmm. What do you think was driving that?
I think in both cases it may be the atmosphere in which we find ourselves in the supermarket or the wine store is sort of priming certain things in our mind. So if I play, I was just at a recent Australian wine conference and you think there, if you've seen these results, you just cannot let the kind of store manager put their iPod on. This is too important a decision for that to be the case. You can make more money. You could change people's choices that they make towards certain varieties that maybe have a bigger markup or that you want to sell or think are very particularly tasty by priming the mind of the consumer. And that could be from labels and say, you know, it could be from kind of a shelf talkers saying, whoever, Robert Parker says, this is a 98. That might do it. It might be through putting flags of particular nationalities on the walls. But if you're, say, an Australian producer, then you think, well, it could be the men at work, it could be the smell of eucalyptus, the Australian flag. All those things would just be, the shoppers' brains would pick up those subtle sensory cues, think nothing of them, be convinced that they weren't influencing their choice, and yet priming associations in our mind. And hence, when we come to make a difficult choice between this or that new world wine, say, we may end up tipping for the one that's kind of more easy to access in our mind, because of the smells, the sound, the music, yeah. The lighting.
That priming, that's a bit like how the supermarkets tend to put bakeries now and then. I think part of that is the smell, because you walk near a bakery and you smell the baking bread, and it smells lovely, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite subtle. Well, maybe not subtle.
Or something people have heard of. I think maybe that's what a good one for us to rely on, in as much as I think artificial bread smells are virtually impossible to synthesize.
Oh, okay.
Or if they've done it, it took a very, very long time to get. So when you get smell the bread, very often it is the real bread. Yeah. So that's kind of a good cue to latch on to in some sense. But yes, that kind of the store environment is one where the marketeers and the supermarkets and the chains are thinking about how to create engaging, essentially, experiences at the point of purchase, the point of sale.
What I found the idea about the classical music versus the top 40 quite interesting, because in my mind, when I read the report that you wrote, I thought, is it because people associate classic music with quality or traditional values and, you know, sort of more higher-end side of things, and therefore that would impart a quality to the wines, whereas the top 40 is a bit more fun and frivolous, so to speak. And in your mind, that might be why. So when people are thinking about the purchase, they're thinking, well, maybe if they're primed for the quality end, they're going to think that they're going to purchase a bit more because of that. Is that sort of the... perhaps some reasoning that people might do, or am I...
I mean, whether it's purchasing more or just spending more on the purchases you make.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone comes out with one bottle for their dinner, but the average dollar purchase in that case was higher per item. And I think it's just those associations we have with... I mean, maybe classical music would not be the thing to play in China, say.
Yeah.
Who knows how kind of culturally generalizable some of these findings are.
So would you say that it's more about the if you're going to play music in your store to up sales, you need to make sure the music aligns with the best margin products, but also has a sort of an emotive connection to those products, whether it be music from the country or something.
So ultimately, then you're thinking just because I was at the Australian Wine Conference, thinking about the Australian. Wine vendor, then there it being, who is your most famous classical Australian composer? There must be one, and they came up with one. I'm not sure if I've actually heard what he sounds like yet, or she, but there is one, and that could be the direction that has both the link to the region of origin.
Yeah.
But on top of that, primes these more sort of classy, luxurious, expensive things. And I'd say what's happening in the wine stores. I mean, in a way, when you see so how many sort of independent wine stores have gone out of business, especially in the UK, of the last decade or two.
Yeah.
Is it in part because they weren't thinking enough about the environment? And you see many of the bigger players, be it in wine, but be it in clothing or whatever kind of product or experience they're trying to sell, thinking very, very carefully about all the sensory touch points in store.
So we've talked about sound, audio.
Yep.
You talked about shelf talkers and maybe some...
A couple of other things I've seen that are kind of interesting. One of my personal favourite, because we did the study, was you sometimes see people going into wine stores and they're sort of struggling with all that choice to figure out what to buy. Maybe the music isn't telling them in this case, or switching from one kind of music to another. So what people often do is sort of pick a couple of bottles up and then sort of hold them in their hands as if trying to decide which one to purchase. And you sometimes sort of see them almost sort of lift... weighting them almost, lifting one up, and you think that's not going to tell you what the wine tastes like, but what it will do is tell you subtle differences in the weight of the bottles.
Yep.
And so we spent a very fun couple of days in the Oxford Wine Company store here in Oxford, weighing every single bottle from bottom left to top right, 750 bottles in total, different wines, noting their price, putting them on the scale, looking at their weight, looking at the grape, the country of origin, the vintage, and so on. And what we found was a kind of a very clear correlation between the price that you pay and the weight of the glass that you receive.
Yeah.
As a result, so it's about 8 grams a pound is the going rate in Oxford. And that, then what you see some of the wine producers doing, especially sort of the New World ones who have more scope to play with the packaging, the bottle. I've got some examples here in my office of bottles that weigh empty a kilo and a half.
Yeah,
more than a kilo and a half.
I saw those bottles, thought you were just having a really good time.
Yeah,
I didn't realise it was research.
Research. I left them up there for a long time. Yeah. Eventually,
what
okay,
did you do with the liquid?
We know how much they weigh now. Let's just see what they taste like.
Obviously, you took the liquid out. Obviously, yeah.
And other ones, you know, are sort of the bottom end are less than a kilo full of wine.
Yeah,
there's a huge difference in weight. People are using that, so that's bringing touch into kind of the marketing equation at the point of sale, through to the lighting as well. There are things there about sort of if it's bright lighting, people will not want to linger, make it more subtle at one level. But also work done on both in a winery on the Rhine by Daniel Oberfeld in Germany and in his psychology lab thereafter, who took sort of people on a wine cruise coming down the Rhine, stopping off at the winery, and they just varied the colour of the light bulbs in kind of the testing room.
Mm-hmm.
And looked at people's estimates of how much they would be willing to pay for this Riesling or that, as a function of the colour of the light bulb. So the wine was served in black tasting glasses. Yep. The wine didn't change colour. All that changed was the ambient illumination or hue. And there, people were willing to pay as much as 50% more for exactly the same bottle of wine, simply as a function of changing the colour of the light bulb. Really? And then asking them about the fruitiness, the spiciness of the wine, that their ratings of those qualities changed as well as a function of the...
So obviously a lot of shops have tasting areas.
Yep.
What sort of colours should they sit their light bulbs in the tasting areas?
Exactly which one colour is the right one is probably hard to say. That it makes a difference is clear. And then it can be kind of a mixture of maybe, you think on the one hand...
In the notes,
yep.
in the review, he said that, well, you wrote up that white and green got the lowest price and blue and red were better priced.
Yep. But I guess we have to say that's specifically for Riesling.
Yep.
Is that same claim true a Burgundy, say?
Or a Cab Sauv, yep.
Perhaps not.
Okay.
So I think, and also, I guess we differ in our preferences for different qualities of wine, some like them sweet or fruity or heavy. And so you can see the lighting and the music is almost kind of seasoning the wine.
Okay, yeah.
If you like your wine very sweet or dry, then perhaps you might want to try drinking it under this lighting condition rather than that.
Okay.
But as just a general thing that anybody could go out there and buy, okay, tell me what it is. Is it a blue light bulb I need? I think we haven't, at least as yet, haven't quite got enough evidence to say I can guarantee or anyone can guarantee that a particular light bulb will work for all wines, for all peoples.
Yep.
But just thinking then about the lighting and the sounds in the place where people taste wine through to the glassware that's used. Once you start thinking about that, then you can almost start to design experiences for people to take a regular tasting session into something a bit special, a bit memorable by saying, you know, if I change the colour now, do you think you're still drinking the same wine? I'll give people two wine, one under red lighting, then switch to blue lighting. People will say it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And you say it's only the lighting case. They come away learning something about the impact of the atmosphere or the environment on the taste of the wine and potentially having mechanisms with which to season if they want or to bring out, to emphasise a particular note.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And also, I suppose one of the things I've noticed, this sounds a bit different, is the packaging, for example. If you look at Tesco's, they have their cheap tomatoes mm-hmm. in a blue bag because blue and red make a sort of a greenish tinge to it and they look unripe and unpleasant. And the more expensive ones are in red bags because red makes it look more mm-hmm. attractive for a tomato, which is not quite the same as what you're saying, but there are where that colour change will change your perceptions mm-hmm. of a product.
And we've been sort of doing events with some sort of Britain's top cocktail maker from a couple of years ago down at Colebrook Row in London, and he's reported anecdotally that when he does kind of cocktail masterclasses, that when you play loud German techno, it changes people's perception of alcohol. So I've seen this mostly in sort of spirits and mixer type studies, but I guess the same would be true in wine, that if you've got the loudness of the music in the background will also change your ability to perceive the alcohol in a drink, and under louder music things can taste sweeter than under quieter background noise conditions.
We're going to talk about music specifically. We're going to talk quite a bit about that in a minute. Charles, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.